Ho, 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 and welcome to another episode of Ain't It Scary with Sean and Carrie, brought to you by Killer Podcasts, an Evergreen Podcasts network. I'm the titular Sean.
And I'm the very titular Carrie.
It's the show that takes you inside the festive, the jolly,
oh,
the gumdrops and the sugar plums, and tries to find an answer.
Is a sugar plum just a sugared plum?
We're going to try to find the answers today, Carrie.
Okay.
I'm going to have to guess yes.
Hmm.
So, it is, Carrie, a Christmas special this week. It's a special Christmas week. Mm-hmm. Christmas is, I mean, listener, you can listen to this whenever you want. You might be listening after Christmas, but we're recording just a few days in advance of
Christmas.
Yeah, the big fat man's big day. As like 40s songs are always fat shaming Santa Claus.
And going, yeah.
Here comes the fat guy.
Yeah, it feels... feels negative. Feels negative because Dean Martin, you're just drinking whiskey and smoking cigarettes. You're not fat, of course, because you're not eating.
We have a popular sticker, Carrie, in our merch store. I'm thinking that possible holiday tie-in. Can we stop fat shaming Santa, please?
Yes, we do. We do have that. And if anyone else, wants to get a sticker or a shirt with that on it, or basically anything really, any of our other designs.
Not the Santa Claus one. We haven't actually made that one.
We haven't made the Santa Claus. No, the Bigfoot. We have some Fresno Nightcrawler stuff. We have DB Cooper. We have our cover art, everything. And we're adding more. Designed by our good friend of the show, Alyssa Papakristos, who designed our cover art for the pod. So if you want to head over there, I'm sure there's going to be some good sales going on this holiday season. To make it easy, you just go to the link bit.ly/3HR604S.
So really easy.
It's a lot shorter than it could be. But it's at TeePublic. You can find our store at TeePublic, or just go to bit.ly/3HR604S.
I mean, it's not that bad.
It's not terrible.
Okay, Carrie, what are we doing this week? We are taking a break from the murder and mayhem of our usual rotation and...
Mongoose.
Yeah, and bringing the listener something fun for the holiday season, right?
Yeah. So, Sean, I've had a hell of a week, I think we can say. And we've both been working a ton in this pre-Christmas rush. We both work in industries that are very about just getting things done before the holidays because there's a lot to get done.
Yeah.
So
I think most industries have an amount of that because somebody will be off next week.
But I just didn't have the gumption or the gall to get a properly researched episode.
You always have the gall. But no, this is going to be fun. I think in lieu of that.
I just didn't want to deliver like a subpar product to our listeners. But there was no 20 pages of research written out in me this week. So I thought back to when we did our fantasy draft over at Patreon. And you can find us over there too.
And you have been prepping for our second annual Patreon fantasy football draft, isn't that right?
Yes. And I thought
it's a little late this year, but just in time for the playoffs, we're going to do that.
So that'll be going up our part two if you're interested in parts one and two. But I thought that was kind of a fun format to sort of review all of the crazy characters and topics we've covered so far. You know, it's the end of the year. This is when all these things get done. We have all of these little top 10 lists and all of that.
Sure. But if, fantasy football is for our patrons, then what is this episode going to be, Caroline? What could we possibly draft?
Well, what we're going to do today is give the draft a holiday spin. So we're going to make our own story about saving Christmas, cast it with all of the strange folks we've covered, and then our listeners can decide which one of us assembled the better Christmas-saving team.
Okay, so kind of a Rankin-Bass Year Without a Santa Claus special.
Yeah, but like we have two different casts, and then voting will be up on our socials for a week, and we'll reveal the official results next episode. I know on Twitter and Patreon and Facebook, we can have actual polls, but on Instagram, just comment with your vote if you'd rather vote there.
I guess we'll both come up with movie titles for ours.
Yeah, by the end of this, I think we'll have the vibe. So some rules for this. Once one of us picks a character for their team, the other can't choose it for their Saving Christmas team.
Yep, not for a different role, not for the same role, nothing.
And just keep in mind, friends, this is just...
You can't be in Ants and A Bug's Life. You know, you can't be in Deep Impact and Armageddon.
Yes, sure. I'm sure there's like someone that was. But this is all in good fun. We're not actually endorsing any of the killers or whomsoever we may draft. So it's just for fun. It's not meant to be serious. And we're talking Christmas because Christmas movies are the most ubiquitous and both of us celebrate Christmas. So
right. If you celebrate in another way.
This is just a Christmas movie for you to watch in the background at a friend's house while you get drunk on schnapps.
100%. And enjoy celebrating however you do. In the words of one of my favorite podcasters, Scott Aukerman. Mm. Big ups to people of all stars and stripes this holiday
brother.
Season.
Okay. All right. So we know what order we're going in, Sean. So we have 10 Christmas characters, I guess, that we need to be casting with people that we've, people or things or whatever that we've encountered in our last 115 episodes of this show. So how do we want to do this? How do we want to go back and forth?
Well, let's go. You've got obviously some kind of a plot and you have some roles in mind. So why don't you take me through? I think I can guess who's going to be, you know, involved in this Christmas story.
We casting as we go along?
Yeah. Oh, I think yes. As you go through each role, let's do our best to cast them.
Okay. All right. So we got to start off strong.
Who's the lead in this picture?
Santa.
Of course.
Santa Claus. So, you know, he's the big guy. He sorts kids into naughty or nice. He works all year towards the big day, delivers all the toys, brings joy, the symbol of Christmas.
Is he going to be dealing with some kind of a crisis in this?
Well, the crisis here, it's kind of a Santa Claus with an E situation. Santa's disappeared, gone, dead, whatever, and we need to replace him, but we can only replace him with people or things or whatever from our episodes.
Oh no, but Carrie, if there's no Santa Claus, what will all the good little boys and girls do Christmas morning?
Well, that's why we have to recast them.
Okay. I guess there's only one question, Carrie. Why don't you take me through your decision-making process and tell me who your Santa Claus is out of all the creeps and weirdos that we've covered on this podcast.
So I had to start off big. And when I think, you know, bringing joy to children, when I think of...
Lots of candidates, lots of stories on this podcast are joyful.
When I think of a symbol known the world over, a symbol that really stands for so much, childhood memories.
Carrie, I don't want to hear you say Q.
No. No, we're going W, as in Walt Disney.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
I see. Okay. Yeah, I could see. I mean, obvious connection to children's hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously likes making people happy.
Great at branding.
Mm-hmm. He's going to keep those elves in line as far as labor relations go. You know, he has a firm backhand.
Oh, God. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
If the elves try to unionize, no thank you, says Mr. Disney.
Absolutely. He has got a good business sense, but I think he also has a touch of whimsy, too, a touch of creativity that Santa needs to have.
Absolutely. I think that's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to hear mine?
Absolutely.
Okay, so for Santa Claus, I'm thinking, yes, you're right, he is jolly.
Mm-hmm.
And the Santa Claus I've picked might not score high in that regard, but you know what? Neither did Tim Allen at the beginning of The Santa Closet, and he really got into the holiday spirit as it went along. So this guy's starting out at kind of a, you know, baseline level personality, I would say, but I would like to see him, you know, grow into the role in jolliness.
Okay.
What he is bringing, Santa Claus has a job description that almost no one can fill. Santa Claus needs to get all over the world in one night. In other words, you need not just a man, but someone with basically unlimited control over time and space. You need someone who can travel wherever they want to at any point.
Are you picking God here? What's happening?
No, but I am picking the next best thing. Andrew Basiago.
Shut up.
The time traveler. I think...
Wow.
And he doesn't have the look, but, you know, he's...
They'll grow into it.
He'll grow into it.
Yeah, like Tim Allen.
Yeah, absolutely. He's got gray hair. He's you know, he's a little paunchy. I'm not bad-mouthing Andrew's physical fitness, but I think with a little bit, little couple extra layers, I think he could grow into the role physically. And he needs a beard, obviously. I don't know if Basiago can grow a beard.
Right. Wow. Yeah. I mean, you know, he can get anywhere at any time.
Extensive training from the U.S. government with Barack Obama, as you remember.
A fondness for children, as he was once one.
Yes, he was once one, and he saw that little child lose his feet.
Yeah, so that's something. Andrew Basiago. All right.
He already knows Jesus, so I feel like there's some tension between Santa and Jesus sometimes. Mm-hmm. You feel that in the churches around Christmas. And Andrew's going to go a long way towards smoothing all of that over because he personally was there at the crucifixion and he knows Jesus.
Yeah. All right.
So yeah, Andrew Basiago, I think, is going to make a great Saint Nick. I have a feeling if the hat's wool, it's going to cause hives or something. He seems like an allergenic guy, I think we're going to be okay.
All right.
Yeah. Would you like... You wouldn't like a backup, would you, for Santa Claus?
Only if you want to tell me it. I don't.
I just thought, if we take a different spin and Santa Claus isn't real, and we need someone who can convince children all over the world of a huge lie through smoke and mirrors and maybe some kind of visual trickery, I thought Joseph DeMombro from the Order of the Solar Temple.
Certainly visual trickery.
He's a leader.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yes, the trickery of it all is...
People had enough faith in him to kill themselves.
Glowing swords and the whole deal. He might show up in my fantasy football draft as well. You're going to have to tune in, patrons, and find out.
All right. Well, moving forward, so we have Santa. He's either Walt Disney or Andrew Basiago. Now we need the Mrs. Claus. This is Santa Claus 2 with an E.
By the way, I think we can all agree Disney has more of the personality in place for Santa Claus. How's he getting all over the world? You got to give it to Basiago on that one. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. Just had to make my pitch.
Okay. So now we have Mrs. Claus. Now, you know, this could be a man, a woman, a cryptid. Doesn't matter. It's just a symbol. But the real Mrs. Claus is gone, disappeared, dead, whatever. She's the power behind the throne. She keeps everything moving while Santa is entangled in managing Christmas. So this is someone that has a very strong sense of home and family, but, you know, she's got to be tough because she's on her own a lot, I'm sure. She's got all these elves pawing all over her all the time, I'm sure. So my choice.
Why do you think they're pawing all over her?
Because.
What are these pervert elves you're thinking of?
My choice for the new Mrs. Claus is Sarah Winchester.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we know she's comfortable being around a lot of builders.
She is. She loves builders. She has a creative mind of her own. But she, at the end of the day, she would have been most happy just being with her family and supporting her husband, raising her kids, and not having to build an endless house to nowhere. So I wanted to give her a little bit of a taste of that life. I think she was a nice lady. She was very charitable. As we talked about on our Winchester Mystery House episode, she especially gave to orphan children. And I think that could be like her thing. Like, you know, how Kate Middleton has like her own patronages and charities. She's going to be the Kate Middleton to Santa Claus and really make sure that he's you know, getting all of the kids, even the ones less fortunate, even the ones in random places all over the world. So Sarah Winchester, Mrs. Claus.
I love it. I have to admit, I had chosen a lady, feeling like I had to choose a lady. But now that you've freed me from gender concerns, I'm actually going to call an audible on Mrs. Claus. And I think Mr. Basiago is going to be a lot happier with my new choice. You talk about the power behind the throne. You talk about somebody who knows how to keep things organized. Maybe they're not the main attraction or the thing that the family is selling, but they are the one who gets it done, the one who gets everything organized, gets the brand in front of people. A go-getter. And so I'm thinking the perfect Mrs. Claus to Andrew Basiago's Santa is none other than Ed Warren.
Wow.
So, I mean, Ed Warren's going to get the publicity in there.
Mm-hmm.
Ed Warren made his wife's, you know, alleged clairvoyance into a family business where they didn't mm-hmm. have to do any other stuff because they would just go and talk about ghosts places. That's not because of Lorraine. Lorraine was too quiet to get that done.
You're saying you're picking Ed over Lorraine in this role specifically because of his kind of confidence and go-getter status.
Yes, maybe he's not the power behind anything because he wants to get in front of cameras as mm-hmm. often as he can. But I think he's going to be a great partner for Andrew, who's a little bit more reserved.
And Andrew's got a lot going on, just like Lorraine does. He might have some sort of supernatural time travel-y things going on, and Ed's going to rein that in. He's going to, you know, put that on a schedule, and I think Andrew might need that.
Yeah, absolutely. Little authority in his life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Nice. All right, so moving on, we have to have a head elf, the Bernard, if you will.
The Bernard!
If we're going by the Santa Claus with an E. So if Santa is the good cop to, you know, the elves.
In the trailer for The Santa Clauses, when David Krumholtz comes out just like looking rough and,
well,
just goes like,
you know,
did you miss me?
It's like, no one's going to look like a young little elf at this point after 20 years. But anyway, if Santa's the good cop to the elves,
the
Bernard, the head elf, is the bad cop, keeping things on schedule, keeping Santa from getting in over his head, giving into flights of fancy, because you know that Santa must be prone to that. And along with Mrs. Claus, this head elf / Bernard needs to keep things under control.
Yeah, sure. I mean, Basiago is made of flights of fancy.
Mm-hmm.
His For whole sure. backstory is flights of fancy.
Literally. So we need a Bernard in here to keep things moving and keep things on schedule. And so when I think of kind of a bad cop who's in a position of power, but well respected by his crew, people would do anything for him. There's sort of a sense of like fear and admiration. I gotta go Blackbeard.
I love it. So you think... I love the idea of Walt Disney working with Blackbeard, too. What do you think that team would be like?
You know, I genuinely think it's very much kind of a Danny Glover, Mel Gibson, Lethal Weapon situation,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
which is a Christmas movie, so it feels correct. You know, Santa, he's kind of all over the place. He's like, I want to do this. I want to be there. We're going to make this year. And so this head elf, this Bernard figure, is like, I'm too old for this shit. I'm just trying to get to the end of the day. I'm just trying to keep on schedule, keep my to-do list short, you know, things like that. So that feels like a Blackbeard kind of thing, where by the end of Blackbeard's life, he's just trying to get to the next port.
For sure. And yes, stay ahead of the law.
And he's well respected. And, you know, there's an element of fear there that I think is important for anyone in power.
There's absolutely an element of fear. I'm a little worried that Disney's also going to be afraid of his head elf.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that... Oh, here's the other thing. How important do you think literacy is going to be in this job?
I think if you're a magical elf, like, let's say you can kind of...
Well, he's a pirate.
No, but here's the thing. If we're going by Santa Claus rules with an E, then that means that he starts... All of these people will start to get the magical characteristics of the characters they're inhabiting.
Immortal Blackbeard.
Mm-hmm. So Blackbeard will become an immortal elf, and Disney will be able to go all over the world and stuff. He won't have the experience, say, that Andrew Basiago does in time traveling, but I'm sure he can learn.
Does that mean Disney's going to put on a bunch of weight, too?
I think that's going to... Yeah, I mean, I think that'll... Either of them.
It's like when he tried to give up smoking.
Mm.
For my head elf, I did go with a man of letters. I went with a lawyer, somebody who is familiar with the ins and outs of a legal system, a system of rules, someone who is used to organizing groups of people around one concept, and somebody who nobody wants to get in his way.
Because
my head elf is Maximilian Robespierre.
Oh, wow.
The French lawyer and legislator from the Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he would set up a nice little guillotine right in the middle of the workshop.
Is that a little grim for the North Pole?
Well, Carrie...
A guillotine?
What you fail to recognize is that...
Wow.
terror is itself an expression of virtue. It is virtue's most outmost expression.
Barf.
Because it's the only thing you can use to keep people, you know, the sheep kind of on the path of virtuousness. Or so Robespierre would tell you. And so he will tell Santa as he's lining up the next round of little elves. By the way, the elves in my version are nightcrawlers, little Fresno nightcrawlers.
Oh, okay. That's fun.
Yep, and he's just marching them all, just little legs marching mm-hmm. one by one to the guillotine. But the fun thing there is, how do you guillotine a nightcrawler?
In half, I would assume.
It's just a set of legs. So yeah, Maximilian Robespierre, head elf.
All right. Next, we have someone who is an assistant to Santa Claus, another kind of bad cop figure to his jolly good cop.
Worse than Robespierre?
Yes. Well, he's the one that has to handle the naughty kids hands-on. This is a monster who scares and possibly kills children who have misbehaved.
Joel the Lump of Coal?
Krampus, or Krampus. Krampus, the monster, the demon, the ghoul, whatever he might be. He's got to work with Santa, but his thing is the naughty kids. He's either killing them, he scares them, he might be kidnapping them.
We talk about Krampus, of course, in our Santa Claus Dark Origins episode from last holiday season.
Mm-hmm. And so for me, there was really only one real answer for this.
Now, I feel the exact same way. I've been surprised so far that we haven't had any crossover whatsoever. I've been able to go with my first choices down the line. This might be where we butt heads, Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
Who is your Krampus?
My Krampus, my Krampus, is the one, the only, Slender Man.
Aha! I had him in second place here. Mm-hmm. I think he's a strong choice.
Mm-hmm.
Very strong choice for Krampus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's scaring children for sure. He's all over the place. He's got those long legs. He's running all over. He seems like someone who's like a dark kind of character that a 40s Disney movie like a Fantasia would have in it. So I feel like he could work with Walt Disney. Unfortunately, the darker minded kids are already attracted to Slender Man. And I'm thinking maybe at some point, you know, there's going to be like a Lucifer situation, a fallen angel. He's trying to amass his own proxies out of all these naughty children. Maybe try to take Santa down, and that would be an interesting film.
So is Krampus the villain in this film?
Not yet. This is an origin story. But I feel like, you know, by the end of this film, much like a Marvel movie or whatever, we get a post-credit sequence where he's like, maybe I could rule Christmas. You
cool.
Know?
Okay.
So that's my pick for the Krampus.
Okay. Well, I think that's a great pick. Children are already afraid of him. He's associated with children. Mm-hmm. It makes sense up and down. Here's why I didn't go with Slender Man. Because to me, well, what does Krampus do after he takes the children?
It varies from mythology to mythology. He could kill them, or they disappear, or he just scares them.
I think in many of the legends, though, he does eat children.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Okay.
And there's only one person we've ever covered on Ain't It Scary
with
Sean and Carrie who probably has eaten a child.
Yep.
And that's why my Krampus...
Oh, God.
...is none other than Tarar,
mm-hmm.
the French peasant and showman and the hungriest man who ever lived.
Yeah.
Tarar, I mean... Here's the problem, is keeping him on task, because he's just kind of, he's going to shuffle from place to place, just shoving whatever garbage he can find.
That's the thing, yeah.
But if you can direct him at the naughty children, find a way to weaponize Tarar.
Give him a little Ritalin or something, get him to focus.
I don't think there's going to be anybody left on the naughty list, because he will never not be hungry.
Hmm. So we're going straight to child eating. We're not just scaring children here. We're not lump of coaling them. We're killing them.
That's right. And in the second, in my sequel, Tarar Goes Too Far. And that might even be the title.
Two with a T-W-O.
Yes. In the sequel, Tarar Goes Too Far and we have to take him down.
Okay. So in either way, we're getting a devious Krampus out of this.
Well, Krampus should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we agree that Krampus is being set up as a future villain, even though he's kind of an anti-hero in this episode.
Yeah, we're going like a Loki situation here. Like, is he good? Is he bad? Depends on the movie.
Disney Plus series in a couple of years. Boy, oh boy.
Yes. Okay. All right.
Well, we've got all of the main North Pole figures all lined up. So maybe that's time to take a break, Carrie.
All right. Well, we got six more characters to cast. Let's go.
The listener is going to be on tenterhooks wondering who else we can fit into this North Pole drama.
Santerhooks.
That's good.
Popo Gijo.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
Welcome back. I have a steaming hot mug of eggnog here.
Ew.
Because the refrigerator's not working, but it's a holly jolly Christmas other than that. Caroline, we have gotten through, I mean, the players that would jump to anyone's mind when we're making this Rankin Bass style kind of claymation Christmas special. You got your Santa Claus. You got your Mrs. Claus. You've got a head elf, aka Bernard.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a Krampus.
Mm-hmm.
That was only four characters, and you seemed to imply there are six more?
Yeah, 10 total.
So how are we filling out our Christmas roster here? Because I'm racking my brains for any other North Pole characters.
No North Pole people, like things, I don't know. No more North Pole, but we're going to go down to Earth and maybe the beyond a little bit.
Oh, well, that's on brand.
For the next few. And we're going to begin with a character from Charles Dickens's A Christmas Carol, Mr. Ebenezer Scrooge.
Oh, we're bringing Scrooge in. Is this like a B-plot?
We can be, sure.
Like, is the Christmas Carol just happening underneath all this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And so we all know Scrooge. I mean, there's been like 500 versions of that story, but, you know, he's a rich miser who has a visit from three ghosts to show him the meaning of love and charity and Christmas. He's kind of a Grinch type. You know, he starts off a real meanie and then his heart grows three sizes. So who?
You know, Scrooge might be kind of the villain of the piece if he is in charge. He owns a toy company or something, and he's going to stop. This is my movie. He's going to stop production on all the toys before Christmas.
Mm.
And so Andrew Basiago, as the new Santa Claus, has to help the ghosts that we're going to talk about, I assume, in a minute, to bring my Scrooge around. And we'll see who my Scrooge is in a moment.
Interesting. Well, so I was really concentrating on, like, the older aspect, you know, a bit out of touch with society and human kindness, maybe. Rich, certainly. And someone who, if they were in a position of power and they learned about the real struggles of people and things like that, it would be good. It would benefit the world if they were to have kind of a whole character arc there. And so I chose the former Prince Charles, King Charles III of England, who we discussed in our Princess Diana series.
Wow, Dominic West himself from The Wire.
No. Too good looking to be Charles.
That's who plays him on The Crown, listener.
So King Charles III of England is our Ebenezer Scrooge, who needs to be visited by three ghosts to learn how to be a normal person and love.
It's really bold to keep the Charles after, you know, after what happened with the first two.
People were speculating he wouldn't, but he sure did.
Okay, so what lessons do you think he needs to learn?
Well, he needs to learn. I think he's grown up in a world that is catered to him, but it is also very formal and strange. And he just needs to learn what real people do and the real struggles of the lower classes, if you will. And in learning that, he could make their lives better, like Scrooge does.
Hasn't he been like an advocate for education his whole life? And
I'm just saying, it could be better.
Yeah, well, yeah, he could have treated his wife better, certainly.
Certainly that.
But now he's just in love and being a king.
Okay.
Short king.
All right, so my Scrooge is Prince King Charles.
I love it. I think it's a great choice. Mm-hmm. With Ebenezer Scrooge, what I was going for was somebody with, like, a real Grinch. Somebody whose heart is just shriveled up inside their chest. They, yes, wealthy. That's important. But
they have to be able to make a full change into goodness. It has to be believable.
Everyone can make a full change into goodness, Carrie. Even the Reverend Cotton Mather.
Absolutely not.
Who is my Ebenezer Scrooge.
No. Piece of shit Cotton Mather?
Who needs it more? And when you hear who my ghosts are, they're going to bring this guy around.
Okay.
I'm very confident.
Okay.
So Reverend Cotton Mather, obviously one of the movers and shakers behind the horrific Salem witch trials, witch burnings in America, early America more generally.
Witch hangings, we never burned.
Sorry, witch trials in America more generally.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Puritan minister who gave all kinds of horrible sermons about how everyone was going to hell. He was a hateful man. And he obviously, the Puritans didn't celebrate Christmas, by the way, so who more perfect than Cotton Mather to learn the joy and meaning of Christmas? And if he's brought around, the whole audience is in tears. This is a character arc. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought about it.
I thought about making it Henry VIII. He's already having fun at Christmas.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I go Reverend Cotton Mather.
All right, well...
And Andrew Basiago is going to help him see the way.
So we're going to skip over Jacob Marley, who is technically the first spirit that visits Scrooge.
Feels like a Tony Valor to me.
We got to get a Tony Valor pop in there.
Or you know who would look great wrapped in chains is Poe, but I don't know if you have him coming later on.
In chains.
Yeah, Edgar Allan Poe just kind of.
Oh, I thought our dog Poe.
No.
I did consider Edgar Allan Poe for any of these ghosts because he's a spooky guy, but yeah, Jacob Marley might work.
And because he's probably a ghost.
Mm-hmm. But we're going to go with the Ghost of Christmas Past first. And this is a strange kind of otherworldly being that shimmers and flickers in the candlelight, constantly changing in appearance as it reflects Scrooge's memories back to him, both old and new. So very, very changing, very supernatural. And there was also this emphasis on like both young and old at the same time. And so I chose Mercy Brown, the possible little vampire girl.
Well, this is great. She drank the blood of her siblings from beyond the grave.
Maybe. She could. She has a reason to haunt because she was dug up and had her heart carved out so her brother could eat it so he wouldn't become a vampire.
Does she have a reason to help Cotton Mather see the light? Or help
Prince Charles?
Prince Charles see the light.
We've talked about enough that I could have just gone, oh, the ghosts are Princess Diana and Henry VIII and like have all them all be people related to the royal family. But I was kind of going more for the characters, right? Because Scrooge doesn't necessarily know these ghosts personally, aside from Jacob Marley. But they still manage to change his perspective and his life. And I think Mercy Brown could do that. She's got that kind of young and old thing at the same time, because she's like a little vampire girl, kind of like the Claudia in Interview with a Vampire, where she's like very mature, but she looks like a little girl. She's kind of changing in appearance because she stays a vampire, so she doesn't rot when she dies. And she's kind of this innocent child that I think would be a good first stop for our Prince King Charles to meet and be changed by.
Beautiful. Mm. I think Mercy Brown's an inspired choice.
Thank you.
When you were naming just various British royal family ghosts, I was worried that you would stumble upon my choice for the Ghost of Christmas Past, which is the two princes from the Tower of London.
Oh, the two princes that were probably murdered by Richard III or associates.
Probably murdered, but may have survived and lived into adulthood in obscurity. If they did die, no one knows who killed them. So I feel like the young and old person, there's this...
Schrodinger's little boys.
Yes.
They could be both young and old at the same time because we don't know their fate.
And there's so many different interpretations of that story. Were they murdered? Who murdered them? If so, that everyone just kind of looks at them and takes what they want to out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, that is the archetypal Dickens description of the Ghost of Christmas Past. And, you know, I think if two haunting little boys slash adult men...
That may have been killed by a possible ancestor?
Uncle.
No, ancestor to Charles.
Oh, yes. Well, for
me, it's for you,
Cotton Mather.
Cotton Mather, yeah. But still, he put a little girl in prison or helped. So he needs to learn that children shouldn't be tortured or imprisoned.
And well, that's my other point. These two are victims of, unlawful imprisonment and children. So it's kind of facing Cotton up with the with his own sins. Also, did these boys die before or after Cotton Mather was kicking around?
Oh, before.
So, okay. So it is still Christmas Past.
Yes. But now we're going to the Ghost of Christmas Present. And this is the personification of the Christmas spirit. It's always depicted as kind of a jolly giant, you know, very gregarious, combining ideal and real and supernatural aspects with humor and sympathy. He's the nice one. He's not creepy in any way. Yeah, he's got a very Dionysus-esque quality to him.
He has like a cornucopia with him and stuff.
Yeah, he's always drinking wine and he's like, oh, he's very Santa-esque in how Santa is traditionally depicted. But I was thinking of someone who kind of embodies that sort of larger, gregarious charisma for sure, because I feel like in every depiction, it's very charismatic, the Ghost of Christmas Present.
Nerve, talent.
Exactly. Not RuPaul, but Elvis Presley.
This is beautiful. I like this.
He loves to eat.
Well, since I've seen the present.
Elvis, we know from his album, loved Christmas. Okay, he's kind
and
of a
from
symbol
the Christmas
of
special.
Yes, he's kind of a Christmas symbol. He was a bigger boy by the end there, very iconic as a bigger boy.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also
Fat
known
King.
Also known for both his enjoyment of life's pleasures and his generosity in bestowing those pleasures upon others, usually to his detriment. He was probably pretty badly in debt by the time he passed away. So
I love Elvis as a Dionysian figure. I think that's great.
Yeah. So he's going to be, and you know, Charles might have even met him in life. Certainly knew who he was. So I feel like it's an interesting figure to bring in there as a kind of the symbol of like charisma and positivity, but like, be careful because you don't want to overindulge.
I love it.
So that's my choice for Christmas Present.
Really leaning into the Horn of Plenty aspect of this here, I went with somebody who blesses his followers with fertility and crops in the year to come.
Oh God!
I went with the man who guarantees dinner on every table. I went with none other than Chippy Totec, our Lord Flayed, the Aztec fertility god.
Different vibe, probably more disturbing.
Well, yeah.
Elvis.
Listen, it's still supposed to be a ghost, so I want it to be.
I guess.
And Cotton Mather's gonna flip a shit when Chippy Totec shows up.
When he
up.
Finds that there's another god, yeah.
Well, that first, but also Chippy Totec shows up wearing. Remember all this human skin?
Yeah.
His statues always have like extra fingers, which is supposed to be the hand of the like extra skin suit hanging down. So Chippy Totec
is a grim avenue to take with this character.
The two princes were a grim avenue. Chippy Totec is fun.
Yeah. I mean, we both chose dead children, so, you know.
He's wearing his fun little bubbly suit. of like human
of skin
fat pustules.
It's disgusting.
And listener, if you missed our human sacrifice episode, just go look up Chippy Totec. And yeah, I think that he, again, Horn of Plenty, he's going to show Cotton all the good things that he could be having if he was engaging in the warmth of human kindness and occasional human sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Which our Lord Flayed also demands, naturally.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. All right. Well, now we have the ghost of Christmas yet to come, and this is the one to me that definitely should be creepy. He's kind of a, they, I guess, is a, kind of a grim reaper figure. The ghost of Christmas yet to come is introduced in the Christmas Carol as a ominous, silent figure, quote, a solemn phantom draped and hooded, coming like a mist along the ground towards him. Scrooge feared the silent shape so much that his legs trembled beneath him, and he found that he could hardly stand when he prepared to follow it. It's really a personification of death. And who do I feel is a personification of death, has kind of this recognizable, mysterious image, would certainly hit a nerve with Prince King Charles as Scrooge? I went with Jack the Ripper.
Oh, as the ghost of Christmas. Is, how do you think he manifests? Is it a Gentleman Jack?
It's Gentleman Jack for sure. No face. It's like a shadow, kind of like how it's depicted. Basically anywhere the Christmas yet to come is always like a grim reaper with no, like a black face, or sometimes, it's, I think it's sometimes Scrooge, right?
When he finally draws the hood back,
yeah.
In like the Disney one.
I think. I'm the villain kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it's Scrooge McDuck.
And I think in that way, Jack the Ripper really represents, as Gentleman Jack, of course, really represents the idea of the upper classes preying on the lower classes, mm-hmm. this mysterious, faceless figure kind of preying on these lower class people.
So he's not wearing a hood. His face is just overshadowed by his large topping hat.
It's just like a shadow, basically. And he's got a top hat and a high collar. And Charles would recognize this as Jack the Ripper. It's like the classic Jack the Ripper look. And, you know, you have that kind of bit in the back of like, oh, was Prince Albert or whatever.
Albert Victor.
Yeah, the real Jack the Ripper, my ancestor, you know, so it's kind of got this thing of like,
oh, that's when he reveals his face, that's what it is. It's Prince Albert Victor.
Exactly. And he recognizes him from a portrait, Sean, in Buckingham Palace. And he goes, oh, I've got this darkness in me. I've had it all along. It came from my ancestors. I need to work against this, or else I will become the darkness.
Carrie, I fucking love this arc.
Mm-hmm. And so, Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, Jack the Ripper.
Okay. You are right. You are right that we need someone mysterious.
Mm-hmm.
You are right that we need someone frightening.
Mm-hmm.
But also someone who is committed to helping people enjoy the sights and sounds around them, to helping people enjoy life,
mm-hmm.
and really get the most out of it. Somebody who loves music. And so that's why I'm going with, similar to you, this is we don't know exactly who this person is.
Oh.
But I think the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come is the Axeman of New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
Don't hurt me, Papa.
Don't hurt me, Papa. And so how would he be depicted to Cotton Mather?
Oh, I think you would see his face.
Mm.
I think he would be a jazz trumpeter with an axe slung over his shoulder.
Of course.
The trumpet's like hanging from his belt.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think he's just, he's pretty nondescript except for the fucking axe hanging over his back. And he's always muttering some jazz under his breath.
You know, muttering jazz.
And what we know about the Axeman is that if people weren't jazzing it up,
he was going to kill him.
That's who he was going to kill. So he wants everyone to have a good time.
Or else.
Yep. Kind of like the Ghost of Christmas Present, Chippy Totec. He wants to make sure that everyone's enjoying themselves around Christmas and living life to its fullest. Because, as the Axeman reminded us, it is so brief.
Wow. Wow, that's pretty deep, Sean. So that's the end of our Christmas Carol segment, okay? So this is our little B plot going on. And now we have two characters that can fit in basically anywhere. felt very archetypal to a classic Christmas movie, but, you know, they're here without any of the other characters in their storylines, but they fit. And the first one that I chose was Clarence the Angel from It's a Wonderful Life. So he's the angel that's trying to earn his wings. He's bumbling but well-meaning. He's very good at showing George Bailey, Jimmy Stewart, the positive effect that he's had on the world. He's a good character. He's kind of a ghost of Christmas, blah de blah, but instead of being scary, he's a guide. He's a gentle spirit. And
he's also kind of bumbling, and he seems to be drunk.
Goofy a little bit, but very sweet. And so I was thinking, who's kind of, you know, seen as like lighthearted, goofy, but, you know, deep down is definitely very smart. You would want them to be around kind of showing you this stuff. And so I chose Paul McCartney.
Oh, well,
as Clarence the Angel.
He has those sad, sleepy eyes.
He has the sad eyes, but he's also very whimsical. Paul McCartney's always been very whimsical.
Oh, so you're going to jump off a bridge, pippity-pip.
Huh? Yeah, I mean, I feel like he would take this role with a lightheartedness, but also a sincerity. I think Paul, more than any other Beatle, and of course we discussed the Paul is Dead rumors on our podcast, which is why I'm bringing him up, but more than any other Beatle, he's very sincere. And so I think that really lends itself to this sort of guiding role.
So there's this man, you know, and he's saying, I'm better off dead than alive. And I was like, hey, man, you look sound as a pound to me, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So that's my Clarence the Angel, Paul, Sir Paul McCartney.
Thank you for giving him his proper titles.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I just made a game time decision. Mm. I'm going to swap out who I was going to use, and let's get the sad eyes of Edgar Allan Poe. I think this is where we get him in. And at the end, after he helps, because the ghosts have failed.
Oh, he becomes an angel?
He gets raven wings.
No.
And he flies up to heaven.
I mean, listen, I'm not supposed to be rooting for your choices here, but I love that because I love that kind of redemption for him.
And
there is that mystery of whether he did kill himself, which I feel like would lend itself to a George Bailey situation.
Yep. And he was kindly.
He was.
But also a sad sack and a drunk.
He was, yeah.
So Clarence all over to me.
It's Clarence all over.
Yeah.
Again.
I was going to say Mike Hughes, the Flat Earth Daredevil, because nobody needs wings more than that guy.
But. Oh, boy. I like Poe. I like Poe for this. Edgar Allan.
Oh, I thought you meant our dog.
I love Poe. And our last Christmassy character, the last person in our cast.
Yep. As we're wrapping up here, I can hear the sleigh bells in the distance. Someone's going to be tip-tapping on that chimney any moment now.
Oh, 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 oh.
Wow, there he is.
Now, Poe, you leave him alone! Stop it!
We've got the hero of Christmas, the one who saves Christmas spirit from destruction, resilient, quippy.
Well, we already did Santa Claus.
John McClane.
Oh, quippy!
As played by Bruce Willis in Die Hard, which is a Christmas movie.
Okay, so we need someone who doesn't understand rap music.
Sure, but what we need is... We need a hero, Sean.
We do.
Santa is a god, okay? And so we don't really hero worship God. God is an idea, is a force, is an omnipotent being. We need a man. We need a guy or a girl or whatever. Someone human who has human flaws, but at the end of the day will show up, be a little aggressive, but we'll defend Christmas from the darkness and the demons. And if I'm thinking of anyone that we've ever mentioned, it's going to be Zach Bagans.
Oh, this is a pretty good call.
Yeah. He's quippy, okay? He's got his quotes. He's always looking for a fight. He is a fighter on the side of good. He's got his little outfit that he always wears, just like John McClane. you know, he sometimes doesn't think things through when he threatens his ghosts. But he's willing to do that because he's trying to get to the truth. And I think Zach Bagans will save Christmas.
He might, or he might get distracted by a ghost hunt. Who knows? if he has to fly to wherever he's going, I don't think he's going to make it there.
Neither am I, Zach, so that's fine.
And John McClane does have to get on a plane at the beginning of that movie. But that said, for me, John McClane is two things first and foremost. Obviously, he's brave, he loves his wife, he's got quips. First and foremost, you can't do a Die Hard movie without... He's an everyday guy. He's a New York police officer. That's why I'm going with Tony Valor.
Tony Valor?
Retired NYPD officer and UFO witness.
He's got the name.
He's got the name.
He's got the name.
Tony Valor's not a guy that Bruce Willis plays.
Yeah, you know, he's got a complicated relationship with his wife where he's trying to christen the house in our Hudson Valley UFOs episode with the champagne.
God,
and she's like,
Tony!
She's like mad at him. I mean, there's that tension there.
Yeah. So after he gets kicked out,
around New Year's. So we're thinking holiday season.
It's going to be a reverse Die Hard because he'll be flying from like San Diego to Westchester.
Oh yeah.
After he flies out after the marriage falls apart.
Mm-hmm. Tony Valor.
Yeah. And at the end, guess what? It's not a Christmas day. By the end, it's New Year's Day or New Year's Eve, and Tony Valor smashes a bottle of champagne on the side of his boat, which is still in his wife's driveway, and he drinks a victory drink.
Wow.
After he saves the day. That's credits roll.
All right. Well, that's it. So just to go through it, for Santa,
go through your whole cast.
Right. So Santa is Walt Disney for me. Mrs. Claus is Sarah Winchester. The head elf, a.k.a. Bernard, is Blackbeard.
He's Krampus. He's so big.
Krampus is Slender Man, of course. Ebenezer Scrooge is the now King Charles III. The ghost of Christmas Past is the little vampire girl, Mercy Brown. The ghost of Christmas Present is Later Days Elvis. The ghost of Christmas yet to come is Gentleman Jack the Ripper. Clarence the Angel is portrayed, of course, by Paul McCartney.
As no one else could.
And the hero of Christmas who saves the day, John McClane, is Zach Bagans from Ghost Adventures.
Oh, man, I'm just trying to get my wings, you know. I'm just a lad from Liverpool. and in mine, we have... which is Santa Claus Voyages Across Time.
Oh, I need to come up with one. That does sound like a Doctor Who episode.
Yeah, but it's not. It's a Dr. Basiago episode. So Santa Claus, the role will be assayed by Andrew Basiago himself.
He'll do a lot of assaying, I'm sure.
He'll do a lot of assing, for sure. Mrs. Claus will be taken on by Ed Warren.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
We have the head elf in charge of the workshop is Maximilian Robespierre. Krampus in charge of eating the naughty children is Tarar. Ebenezer Scrooge will be the Reverend Cotton Mather.
Dickhead.
And he will learn his lesson with the help of Ghost of Christmas Past, the two princes the Tower of London. Ghost of Christmas Present, even grimmer, Chippy Totec. It might be Hippy Totec, by the way. I'm not going to... It's too late to turn back now. It's Chippy Totec. And the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, played by the Axeman of New Orleans. Again, don't hurt me, Papa. And that's not part of his name. That's just a disclaimer I have to give. Clarence the Angel will be played by noted sad sack and drunk Edgar Allan Poe, who we love. And John McClane, none other than Tony Valor.
All right.
Of Westchester County. So,
I need a name for mine. So yours is Santa Claus Voyages Across Time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, they meet Lincoln at some point, because it's Basiago.
Lincoln was one of my backups for The Ghost of Christmas Present.
I thought of using... John McClane might have been Charles Guiteau, the man who shot James Garfield.
I'm shocked it wasn't D.B. Cooper.
I thought about that,
too. A daredevil, you know?
Well, John McClane's not a daredevil. John McClane...
He's jumping from things.
He's stepping on broken glass, and it hurts.
The Wonderful World of Disney presents Christmas Slay, and it's S-L-A-Y.
Wow. Oh, is this going to be violent?
I mean, Zach Bagans is involved, so I'm sure he's beating up ghosts.
Sure, he's going to be beating up ghosts, but Christmas sleigh?
Yeah.
Mine's the one with the guillotine.
Well, I couldn't think of anything else.
Listeners, let us know which one of these you would like to see, and we will do our best to get funding by next Christmas.
Uh-huh.
Get this thing out in theaters.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and for our patrons, check in soon for more of this style of nonsense as we do our Ain't It Scary fantasy draft for the second year in a row. We love you all.
Yeah, we'll come back with an end-of-year news roundup next episode, but for now, we just want to remind you all to vote on who you thought, I guess, won Christmas between me and Sean and our movies. Voting will be going up on our socials after the episode drops. The proper polls will be on Facebook, Patreon, and Twitter. And second, of course, we want you to have a wonderful holiday. We know that Hanukkah has already started for our Jewish friends. Today, the day we're recording, is the winter solstice, so Yule begins now for other witchy folk like me. We have Christmas coming on Sunday, is it, Sean? Saturday or Sunday? I think it's Sunday. Kwanzaa begins right after that, along with Boxing Day for our British friends, and then, of course, New Year's. I'm sure we're missing some holidays, not intentionally, but in this time of reflection, we hope that you have a lovely, peaceful holiday time. We'll talk to you once more next week before we switch over to 2023, but until then, have a great time and drive safe.
And drive sober, please.
Oh, well, obviously.
I want to take a moment to tell you about my podcast, Carol Costello Presents Blind Rage. In 1984, a woman named Phyllis Cottle was abducted in broad daylight, tortured, and left to die in a burning car in Akron, Ohio. At the time, I was a rookie reporter covering this horrific story. Since then, I've reported every kind of crime imaginable. I've been able to leave most of them at work, but not this one, the one that buried itself under my skin and stayed put. Phyllis Cottle was a badass woman, and I want to tell you her story. A production of Evergreen Podcasts and signature title of the Killer Podcast Network, you can find Carol Costello Presents Blind Rage wherever you get your podcasts. Discover more great true crime and paranormal programming at killerpodcast.com.
That's it for this episode of Ain't It Scary with Sean and Carrie. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Ain't It Scary, and check out our website at ain'titscary.com. You can support the show by supporting our sponsors and becoming a patron at www.patreon.com/ain'titscary. You can call us and leave a message at our Google Voice number, 203-666-5529. And please subscribe to the show and throw us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and also on Spotify. We'll be forever grateful.
We certainly will. And special thanks to our beloved top-tier patrons, Nate Curtis, Sean O'Donnell, Jared Chamberlain, Maria Ferrante, Robin McCabe, Compy Mike, Alex Nakutis, Ryan Regan, Christy Atchison, Ira, Kate Pope, and Haley. We love you guys and Merry Christmas and happy whatever holiday.
See you next Thursday.
Show created by Sean and Carrie McCabe. Music by Kyle Ryan. You can find Kyle at his YouTube channel, Music is a Verb.
Ain't It Scary has been brought to you by Killer Podcasts and is a production of Longboy Media.
Hey there.
I'm Hannah.
And I'm Audrey.
We are a sister filmmaking duo
and co-hosts of Sleepover Cinema.
Our show where we analyze the films that created the collective unconscious of the girls, gays, and theys of the late 90s and early 2000s.
Princess Diaries, The Cheetah Girls, Aquamarine, Cinderella, the one starring Brandy.
We haven't stopped thinking about these movies since we first saw them, and we want you to rewatch them
and review them with us.
Are these movies as bad as critics would have us believe?
Do we even care if they are?
We are always unpacking that very question on Sleepover Cinema.
Check out Sleepover Cinema wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcasts.com.
See you soon.